listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API. Now from the Nowcast Network Studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez. And before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here, on my right, we've got Martin Page. Martin.
How you doing, Mikey?
Good. How you doing, Pagey boy?
Real good to be here.
Next to him, we've got Scott Gershon. Scott.
Hey, Mike.
How you doing, brother?
Good, buddy.
Next to him, we've got Bobby Osinski. Bobby.
Hi, Mike. Hi, guys.
And next to him, we've got, wait, return, Forrest Robinson. Forrest.
Yeah, brother. Hello, brother.
Good to see you, man.
Good to see you, too. Good
to
see all of you.
Out and about and traveling and touring and,
Have been, yes.
And then next to him, we've got Andrew Sheps, ladies and gentlemen.
Hi, Mike. I don't know what that's about. Apparently, are we dating now?
No, it's just that you have the lowest voice.
Ah.
You have the golden throat of the Audio Nowcast.
Excellent.
And finally, we have the one and only Rob Arbiter.
Yeah.
What is up, Mike?
Apparently, you are.
Yes, the cold medicine has kicked in, and I'm ready for action.
Yeah, Rob, I'm impressed.
I wish.
Well, hey, we've got a lot to talk about today. One of the things we're going to talk about on the second half of the podcast is money. We're going to talk.
That's actually
money.
Why I'm here. Yeah.
I thought you were giving it away. I didn't think we were talking about it. I thought you were giving it away.
Hey, but before we do anything else, I need to say congratulations to a friend of the podcast, Andy Jackson, who is the voice that you hear every single podcast. You know, you're listening to the Audio Nowcast. She has she's on a Christian radio station over in Texas, KLTY, and she has a show, Nightlife with Andrea. And she just got syndicated.
So, all right.
She's going to be going nationwide.
So. Should have her here talking about money.
Yeah, really.
So, no, that's really exciting. So, you know, see?
See what this show does for you?
I know.
After just 6 short years.
So I just wanted to say congratulations to her. But before we get going, a couple things I want to talk about. Number one, recently, these last couple weeks, I moved. I've moved my house.
Dun, dun, dun.
And let me tell you. That
same city?
Same city. Oh. Moved about a mile away. But that was – moving sucks.
Yes.
There's just no way, you know, to say it nicely.
Yeah. So did you find your DOS floppy disks?
It's so funny you should say that. I threw away – so it's amazing what you think is precious and what really is precious.
Jet drives and zip drives.
And what a great purge it is when you –
You kept your wife, right?
Get to, yes.
You kept the wife. Okay.
The wife, the family. The cat was border, but it was amazing the purge that you do when you have a big situation like that where you do move, and how much gear is just completely, utterly useless. Just, you know, 12-bit Elise's, you know, reverbs and just crap, just a bunch of junk, just old MIDI timepieces that cost.
Which we're giving away on the podcast.
To one lucky caller. You've got to be like most Americans. You've got to pay a lot of money to buy a storage unit to store things you'll never use again.
That's right. That's
true. Yeah. But have you guys ever got to a point where you actually just, you know what? I'm never going to be using that again. And you just know you're never. As I was listening, you know, as I'm sorting all my stuff out, what Rob said on a podcast a long time ago is there's no such thing as vintage digital. Just, you know, kept playing in my brain, you know. It just doesn't exist. And I had boxes of software and floppies and all kinds of stuff that, you know, you keep just in case, you know, you need to reinstall. But some of these programs I'm never going to use again. I'm just never going to use again. And I just threw them away. And it really, when you finish something like that, a purge like that, it was the sense of just freedom, I guess.
How many pounds of cables? Oh, from dude. IBM to old Macs.
Dude,
to,
I had cables. I still do. As a matter of fact, there were cables that I didn't even know what they went to, so I kind of put them in a box, you know, and 3 boxes later, that's just my keeper cables, you know. I mean, you can only have so many, like, FireWire 800 cables and USB cables.
But you gotta go back. It's like serial cables and...
Yeah,
RS-232 cables.
Or ADB cables.
You know, the one ADB, for me, The one for me is SCSI cables.
Oh, yeah.
Because those things were like 60 or 70 bucks for the SCSI 3.
Yeah.
I just did that.
I could build an igloo out of SCSI cables.
You know what I had?
And thousands of dollars of cables. Yeah. It's useless.
I had a ton of SCSI Terminators.
Yeah.
Ton of those Terminators. I mean, how many times back in the day were you looking for a Terminator?
And you couldn't find one.
You couldn't find one. Apparently, for me, not too often.
You know what we should do? We should actually play like just garbage gear poker. We're like you put 30 SCSI Terminators on the table, and I raise you. I put 40 SCSI Terminators on the table, and whoever has the worst hand has to take all that crap.
That would be awesome. That would be awesome.
I still have a Nakai 612. So,
man.
You need another one? I got it, and the disk drive, and the instruction manual,
and the box.
No, actually, the box got eaten by rats at my last house. The box is gone.
I literally gave away the MIDI timepiece. I remember when I got that thing, I was like the most high-tech piece of gear.
I still use those, actually.
I was never going to use it. Okay. And you know what, actually? And
the then Quadruverb.
I had a Roland reverb that actually was the best thing that I gave away. It was a rack mount unit. It was an old...
The 3000?
It was it was given to me. And so I forgot what it was, but I hadn't used it in a long time. And the guys that came to haul away the junk, one of them was a musician. And so he was sitting there, and he's looking at some of the stuff. And so I just loaded him up. I gave him at least his power amp. I gave him a 12-space rack. I gave him a bunch of, you know, old effects and stuff. And said, here you go, brother. You know, help. Because, you know, the guys out there on a weekend, you know, hauling away junk, you know, it's just like, help the guy out. You know
how much of that junk was still in the original wrappings?
Oh, none of it. No, when I use it, I used it, but it's like, you know, you just, most of the stuff you can do now on your laptop.
You know what, though? You never know a little piece of gear like that, because I was actually the recipient of a load of junk like that when I was like about, I don't know, 19 years old, 20 years old. And it was just some random gear that they were going to throw out from a store. They weren't selling it anymore or whatever. And I got the stuff home and plugged it in and just had some fun with it. And it just made some weird noises. Actually, one of them was an MXR limiter that I still have because it's so bad that it's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And you never know what might inspire you. It might be that something is broken and it just puts out this weird, crazy buzz. And all of a sudden, you're the hot new DJ who has the weird, crazy buzz that everybody wants.
Well, I hope
so. Where inspiration comes from.
I hope
from.
The junk man gets inspired because he will. Knew but, I wasn't
you
got
to give it to your kids. Like, I just found that at a Kawai, was it R100?
Yeah.
Little drum machine.
Right.
And I thought, there's nothing I can use this for except my son.
Oh, yeah.
And then he's like,
But see, my kids get all my laptops. They're on a recycle, and my daughter, she has a little Pro Tools setup that set her up with. And this is
geekiness on a different level.
I mean, it's just some of the stuff you're just not going to go back to. I mean, granted, you're still going to use some outboard gear and things like that. But you know, the new generation that's coming down the pipe, they're going to be doing plugins, and they're going to, you know, it's going to be more computer based. And I'd rather that she learns to work a DAW, work Pro Tools, work something really well, you know.
And then she's only three.
I think you're going through a lot of pain now because you've given it away. You're thinking, I shouldn't have given it away.
You're trying to talk it out. No. Have any of you guys ever purged like that? I mean, really gone through, and I know Rob hasn't.
No. I've thought about it.
Well, it's funny you say that because we have a pretty big garage, and I took half of it and built a studio in it, and the deal was with my wife, because she's been waiting for about a year and a half to park the car back in the garage, and it just has crap in it. A lot of it's old audio, and we had two storage units filled up, and there was no way I was going to get a third to store stuff that I'll never use. So we did the big cleanup, and it's exactly the same thing. And I found, I'd say, SCSI cables left in the package that I bought it in, and from Egghead or, you know.
Yeah, that's bad when you see egg. I actually have a lot of stuff that has the Egghead sticker on unopened software. And it's like Egghead hasn't been around for, what, a dozen years?
Yeah, I just think, well, I'll tell you the hardest stuff for me to get rid of, and actually a lot of it I didn't, was some of the really cool VST plugins, the software. I got rid of the box, but I actually kept the software on cool things from like when Wuzu was with Steinberg and they came out with a lot of the cool instruments, even though XP is going away and it's probably not going to survive
that's the
next
problem.
Transition.
There's not ways to get a lot of that stuff to run.
Right.
A lot of those sounds were great. Like there were really awesome instruments that stopped working only because the company went away. And that's a shame because there's some cool sounds that'll just never be heard again.
Never. And so I figured, well, it's only going to take up this much. And so I'll probably wait till the next purge and I'll be talking, hey, guys, remember that stuff I didn't throw away?
But you know when you bought a piece of gear that you were really proud that you can either finally afford
right.
or it was really great and then you had it and then you find it again. You go, wow, I have this. It's worthless. But I mean, you remember the moment you bought it.
Well, I'll tell you what. I am not cold and heartless. I did keep the one synth that forever I wanted, and I finally bought one, which was a WaveStation. I kept my WaveStation because a keyboard like that, to me, it just meant a lot. When I finally could afford to buy it, it's like I reached a certain point in my career, and I'll never sell that, you know?
I have a Lesis 8 with about like 40 hours on it. So.
Well, my answer to every single one of these things when someone says what gear they have, my answer will always be, do you need another one? Because it's insane the level that I suffer with this. But
museum.
Well, think about this, though. I mean, we're talking about pieces of gear, you know, that you were so excited to get it in the first place. Around the table are people who have owned Synclaviers, Waveframes, Fairlights. I mean, think of the pain with those, where these are instruments that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars when they're new. You'd mortgage your house to get these things.
Yeah.
Right.
And, I mean, they're worth what? I mean, if you can sell $500,000 Synclav for a few grand now, it's a good thing, right?
3348s. Yeah. They're worth $1,500.
Well, we had 400 about, grand.
What was it, about eight years ago? We cleaned up all our companies, and we had a back area. We put all the stuff we weren't using back there. Now, right. Some of it was amazing because it was all the stuff that we had from Signet. And that was, you know, to die for, which I think Andrew has.
A lot of it's in my house.
But we would see like 40 or 50 Waveframes, 3 Synclaviers, everything just stacked up kind of like garbage.
And these things were hundreds of thousands of dollars a piece.
Yeah. At 24 tracks and SR units as far as you can see, 2 tracks. I'm looking in here going, I would have died at the time to get this, and now it's pennies on the dollar.
I have my Studer and my SR rack still in the old garage.
Yeah.
Just linked up.
You know? Although your Studer looks cool.
Hey, no, but like you said, museum.
I'd like to talk to you about that Dolby rack, actually.
I'm into it. Because I talked to Bobby about it. I said, Bobby, here, and he said, now I want to use it without Dolby, you know. Dolby SR was beautiful,
so
and it's still
I'll
there.
You to your house tonight.
It's all in a rack and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
You should also talk
beautiful.
To
and almost hardly used as well.
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right. That'll
but I go, do. Getting back to that though, you walk into my room and I love looking at the Studer. You know, my eyes hit it and I go, I want to look at that.
I got a plug in that you can look at it.
Yeah. But you know what?
It doesn't smell the same.
We did the same thing with your rack, though. We got rid of a lot of the...
Yeah, we did. We did.
The digital... What was that
box? We just moved it next door.
Right, but the... But the Betamax digital system that
we're
you
not,
had.
We did pretty good. We did pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, was that like an F1 or something?
It was. Yeah.
Those were amazing. Wow.
I still got F1 tapes.
Oh, me too. You need more? I'm telling you, that's my answer to all this.
Anyway, all I wanted to say was that it was a really good cleansing.
It was a cleanse cathartic?
Yeah, it was. And, you know, if you want to look at your stuff and just – you really have to know – don't lie to yourself, right? Yeah. I mean, I could have easily sat there and justified every piece of gear again to hold on to it, but I knew me.
But here's the problem. You got rid of old computers, therefore you have to get rid of the old software. I have the computers and the software. So now I can still run that software. And not too long ago, I actually went to storage, got out my old computer with the built-in jazz drive, hooked up my Synclavier hard drive and optical drive to it with the weird software that only worked in a certain thing and transferred all my Synclavier sounds.
Yeah, oh,
that's great.
Yeah.
Which I haven't listened to yet. That's but great. I did do the transfer.
And you know what? That's absolutely fine. You and what you do, that's
I'm not.
That's
I'm
great.
Actually not justifying it. It's such a waste of time and space.
But still, you never know. I mean, I would expect someone like Rob who has a ton of gear but has a ton of projects – and you just never know. But I knew for myself, I tend to be I was like looking forward. I always like to stay on the other side. And I don't, you know, I'm not a producer. I do a lot of sound effects, a lot of mixing and things like that. So it would just, I knew I wasn't going to go back to it.
By the way,
I was gonna move forward.
I will say this. I have only, I think, sold 3 pieces of gear in my whole life. I think I traded in a DX7 towards something once, but I've only ever sold 3 pieces of gear. And the 3 pieces of gear I sold, this is a long time ago, were a Juno 106, an 808 drum machine, and a 909
you
drum machine.
You are such an idiot.
Exactly. Nothing signature about
the
those.
Only 3 things that have gone up in value. Exactly.
And I have since bought, not all of them, but I bought a Juno 106. But the thing is, yeah, I seem to be the predictor of what's going to be the cool cult item. You know, just by selling it. That just makes it cool.
It's amazing because I've still got my Jupiter 8, you know.
Oh, I love the Jupiter 8.
And it's just lying there, and I thought, that's beautiful. It looks great. And I went and got the new Jupiter 80 because I wanted to use it as a controller. But
do you like it?
Yeah, it's great. I love it. I think it's going to turn into a classic keyboard a little bit down the line. It's very deep, but it's an amazing keyboard. And I can feel the same kind of reference and points to the Jupiter 8. But the Jupiter 8, I looked online, they're selling them for something like nearly $3,000. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I'll grab that when I get the Dolby record. You'll always know where it is.
The big fight in Encino, scrapping by a garage.
I've never before seen someone case a joint without actually being there. That's really impressive.
He's already worked me out.
Yeah, he's verbally casing the place.
I've got a DX7 with gray matter.
I've got the DX7 II and the first DX7, I've got the 808.
Your Lin?
Got my Lin, the first Lin 9000,
MPC and
the first MPC-60.
But see, you've got great
pieces. Just lying on the floor.
But you got great furniture pieces, too. I mean, it just would look cool inside a case in a studio and things like that.
Well, I can tell that I'm probably not going to have it much longer.
Anyhow, just like I said, if you're just honest with yourself and you just know what you're going to use and what you're not going to use, you know, just either give it away. That's another thing, though. You know, a lot of the good stuff I didn't just throw away. I gave away because there's always somebody else who can use the gear. There's
high school, college kids.
Exactly. Even, you know, just the junk guy who comes in all the way, you know. Once I found out he was interested, I started loading him up with all kinds of stuff.
But he was gonna end up with it anyway.
Exactly. No, you're so right. Whether I tell him or he puts it in the truck, I score. Either that or Craigslist, one of the two. That's right. What if he wasn't even a musician?
Yeah. He just wouldn't it be great if Mike pulled it back off of Craigslist a year later, you know, and he sees his name on it.
Well, it's funny because Rob and I have sold gear back and forth to each other. That's like true. I needed a big rack, so he sold it to me, and then he needed it back, so I sold it back to him. And
that's true. You
know, that's funny.
Keep it in the family.
All right, we're going to move on from one purge to another. Let's talk Avid.
Well done, Mike.
Okay. What a garage jump sale to
That was fantastic.
That was a good segue.
Avid recently dumped M Audio and Pinnacle. They sold it. They bought M Audio and Pinnacle for $650 million, either just M Audio or both of them together. And no, that was just M Audio. When they bought them, it was $650 million. They sold M Audio for $17 million. If you look at the
– I could have done that.
If you look at their stock price, a year ago, their 52-week high was like $20, and it just closed at like $7 a share today. And I'm talking about the business end of things because a lot of people have a lot of money invested in Pro Tools and
we do.
The gear of Pro Tools. And, you know, they have all these expensive – boards coming out, and I just wanted to kind of open it up just to see if anybody can speculate. I mean, are we really watching Avid just their last breaths, or are they
going to? It's been going on for 5 years,
but
gradually, it's been going on, and all of a sudden, it accelerated really fast.
Right.
Now, if they don't go out of business, they're going to stay as Avid, and the reason why is there's nobody to acquire them. Who's going to acquire them in the business? They're too big.
I do believe, because I think right now Avid represents probably a 90 to 95% market share of post-production. So anybody who wants to be in the post-production business in the manufacturing, and there are companies, can buy at pennies on the dollar. You could be Apple. It could be Sony. A lot of these companies could automatically own post-production, both video and audio,
is
overnight.
That, is that big enough for them?
I think,
and especially in a market that's saturated.
I think that within the next gen, because what's happening, I think, is that with Thunderbolt coming and the way digital video and digital cinemas starting to evolve, right now, it will evolve. And it's kind of like, instead of becoming a big company that's actually on Wall Street, I believe it'll be a private company.
It'll go private.
Absolutely. Yeah. It'll be a boutique way of life company that will buy them. And there's a lot of audio. Oh, I mean, most audio companies are not big corporate entities anymore. They're all these boutique-y guys, you know.
Less than 100 million.
Less than 100 million. Yeah. And I think that there's still a chance that they can go, that they can grow. They have to. They own a market. The question is, they have totally saturated that market. But there is going to be next gens.
But see, they made a bad strategic move by opening it up. See, they were like Apple. Apple makes software so you can buy their hardware. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what DigiDesign did and Avid did. As soon as they opened it up, that just gutted the whole strategy.
But don't you think they were forced to open it up some of the you know, you got Logic coming at one time?
But they didn't do the licensing fees. If they opened it up and said, if you want to make hardware plugins or anything else,
right,
then there's a licensing fee. They become like Microsoft,
right,
where Microsoft makes their money by selling licenses to Dell and other computers. They didn't do that model, and that's the model they should have done.
Right. Well, I'll tell you this one, is that there's no company that's jumping on a weakened Pro Tools right now. I mean, if you think about it, Pro Tools is pretty weak. You know, if anybody came by with a DAW that could have half the functionability and usability in the Pro Tools like the Pro Tools environment, you know, you have a lot of DAWs out there, but none of them work as fluid for the mixing and the editing as Pro Tools did.
They need the hardware, though, with it.
Yeah, and you got like, I mean, look at what happened with Cakewalk and Sonar and them releasing it way too early, their X whatever the latest version is, you know. They released it like 6 months early because Roland basically said, get it out the door. And so they essentially released beta software out there, and it was just full of bugs, and it was just full of problems that now it's kind of working, but look at all that goodwill that they got thrown out. And I don't know. I was just looking at that because I had some issues with Pro Tools. My Pro Tools 10 system is kind of acting up, and it's really frustrated me and stuff. And
what's it doing?
Oh, it's beach balling all the time. I think it's the networking with my D command, because it's just always, it looks like it's always looking for something. I've got, and to open the session just takes forever.
Well, because it's loading everything into RAM.
Right. But I've got I've got the 8-core, the latest.
But are you playing off of an internal drive, or are you playing off the network?
No, I'm playing off the internal drive.
But see, I think
something's broken.
I understand.
I would like to jump in?
Absolutely. Yes.
I think everything everybody has said is completely wrong. Pro Tools is not weak. Their hardware that they put out has sold three times their own projections, which were not that optimistic, but still decent projections. It's Avid that's weak. Pro Tools is ridiculously strong. Pro Tools 10 is entrenched now, and there are, I mean, obviously, I mean, you're having an issue.
Right, and I agree with you.
Like a one-off thing, which hopefully their customer service can help you through, and whether their customer service is in a position that it's as helpful as it should be, I don't know. But I think to say that, you know, if someone could just have, I mean, Fruity Loops could get their crap together,
I agree with what you're saying, but what I'm saying is, no, Pro Tools, listen, I use it every day. It's my go-to. I love Pro Tools. There's nothing that works as good, but Avid's in a weakened state, and you would just think that there would be another company that could.
Well, the end game is not somebody all of a sudden making one of the competitors that for the last 10 years has sucked compared to Pro Tools for certain applications, not for everybody, but
for a lot of them.
For a lot of us and for what we do.
Yeah.
What's going to happen is, will Avid go away and DigiDesign or something like that will take over Pro Tools, or will Avid resurface and get it together on the video side and be strong on both things? But Pro Tools itself will live on, and someone will buy that intellectual property, and there are enough people
who...
But, you know, Avid made a big strategic mistake there, too. They should have kept DigiDesign as a separate company.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it's worth less now as Avid rather than as DigiDesign and Pro Tools.
But that's – yeah, I mean, and they did what so many companies do, and they combine your infrastructure, and that way you have one legal department, you have one marketing department, one everything department except the actual product.
When you're only building one brand.
And but that, you know, it was helmed by somebody who is brought in to make companies saleable. That guy doesn't run companies. He transforms them to then sell them on again. Mm-hmm. And I think the mistake is running it that way, but trying to just keep going because it's not sustainable.
Sure.
Definitely. Yeah, and I don't want to see Pro Tools go away. Like I said, I love Pro Tools. I even like the fact that it's open and you can use it with different interfaces. I just think that it's in such a wobbly state right now that nobody, you just never know where that's going to go. And well, if you're going to,
the other thing about where it's going to go, though, the end of this year is a pretty pivotal moment for Avid and for everybody who uses Pro Tools, because once Pro Tools 11 comes, they've already announced a lot of hardware is not going to be officially supported anymore. It may work, it may not. A lot of computers aren't going to be supported anymore if things go to 64-bit. There's going to be a lot of cleansing where a lot of people have to replace a lot of gear. And it's going to be an expensive transition for a lot of people. A lot of times it's going to be expensive to just end up feature-wise where you are now. And I think it's – I mean, a lot of people are aware that this is coming. But I think when people start really realizing, wow, I've got to shell out this much money to stay in the Pro Tools game, they're at least going to be looking at other options. Right now, but I don't think they're going to find anything compelling.
There is no other options. I mean, I know from the post-production audio side.
Well, it depends what kind of work you do. You work in one very focused – part of the audio world.
But if you look at video games, movies, TV, I mean, that's a pretty big market. Trailers and all post-production, both New York, Chicago, LA, Dallas. There's no easy post-production tool out there right now. Nuendo is kind of faded away. What else is there?
Thank you, Yamaha.
I know. Yeah. I know. I mean, they would be – Nuendo would be perfect to be able to attack Pro Tools. But right now, they've all gone by the wayside. There is no DAW.
But you know what? If something were to come that would spark the imagination of the next generation of engineers, there are constantly revolutions. I mean, it takes every few years there's going to be a revolution.
Yeah.
Just because something's entrenched doesn't mean it always will be. Look at where SyncCloud
goes. No. Exactly. Same as if they went out of business, let's say, in a year.
Pro Tools isn't going to go away. Someone would buy it if it got –
Exactly.
That's
what I said.
Yeah. You know, I always remember that all of a sudden – for a while, the 3348, the Sony 48 track digital machine,
awesome machine.
Every studio had to have one if you were going to be an A studio. They were everywhere, and they were what, $150,000 to buy.
They started at least 3 or 4.
Yeah, they were huge.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But the thing about it is, it seemed like 6 months later, all of a sudden they were obsolete. It happened in a flash.
Yeah. Well, as soon as the next thing comes out.
Yeah, but the point is, all of a sudden, it swapped in no time over to Pro Tools. And I always wondered if that could actually happen to Pro Tools as well.
Definitely.
It could, but I think it's a totally different kind of switch.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
that was a paradigm shift in terms of how you work.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it was... But in the same way, I mean, talking about SyncLavier and WaveFrames and how Pro Tools overtook them, that was, again, I think enough of a paradigm shift you can put it in the same category, where it was being able to transfer audio manipulation from huge mainframe computers to personal computers. Right. That's what happened, is the personal computer got powerful enough to do it. And, yeah, there could definitely be something like that, but I don't
know what?
You're not going to move away from computers.
I don't know where it goes. Well, the thing is, though, it can be a slight paradigm shift. It could be that when Pro Tools 11 comes out and people are being forced to get rid of their TDM HD systems and switch to HDX systems or whatever, they may look at the Universal Audio hardware and say, well, you know what? That's really cool.
Well, right, and stick with the Pro Tools software, though. I mean, that's the thing is that they're
only – Yeah, but still, it's taking money away
more from – stuff that they're obsoleting is their own hardware.
Right.
All third-party stuff will work exactly as well.
But that would kill them if that were to be complete.
Well, one thing I'm also noticing is, again, speaking for Post, is that we're getting away from the personalized computer in the room, and now they want everything playing off the server. So what happens is I can be manipulating the session that the guys that are mixing on. So all of a sudden, if everything lives on the server and you keep updating it, then there's a central system. So this way you don't have to have hard drives and everything.
But I think you're going to see every DAW supporting that pretty soon.
It's starting already.
Nuendo's done it for a long time, and Pro Tools caught up. But I don't think that'll be a deal breaker. I think,
but it's the next gen of what people
I think
will
the
buy
biggest
into.
Thing that's going to impact Pro Tools in the short term is what we said first, is how many people who work there now are getting other gigs because they don't want to be there for the next person.
Sure.
No, that's,
so they're losing a huge amount of talent.
That's right. True.
The brain drain.
But, well, you know, the funny part is, do you guys still have contacts at Digi?
Absolutely.
Sure. You still have the same
tons.
People?
Yeah, actually, I'm lucky. No. There quite are a few who are still there.
We know a lot who've left, but we know a lot who are still there.
There's so many people that I know that don't have a contact anymore and feel completely lost. And I'll give you a good example is my buddy Frank Wells, who's the executive editor at Pro Sound News.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking for somebody to talk to about Pro Tools. I call him up and I said, okay, you know everybody over there. He says, I don't know anybody. He says, I can't give you a number of who to talk to. I said, well, how do you find out about press stuff? He says, they have a third-party PR company that just feeds me stuff. I don't know anybody over there.
Wow.
Now, what does that tell you? When they can't even reach out to the press that they so desperately need.
And Frank, he's a heavyweight.
Yeah. Frank's
a heavyweight. We're not talking
all the time, yeah.
A slouch. Well, all this to say is it's going to be really interesting to see, some of the decisions that are going to have to be made for musicians and just the pro user who's going to invest some money. I mean, like Martin, we're going to be redoing his studio, and we've been holding off. Literally, last year it was like, okay, we're going to do it Christmas time. It's like, nope. We got to wait,
And I was very lucky because I was working on projects and said, let's not change until I finish these songs.
And Martin and I had that conversation after the last podcast.
That's right.
If you don't need to switch the gear you're using, if it's working, just be a spectator. The new stuff will be ready for you whenever you're ready for it. But if you don't need to make the switch, let it all just play out in front of you.
Right.
Well, it's just going to be really interesting to see what happens. But if you want to kind of follow along, just look up Avid on any like Google Business or anything like that. And there's a lot of information that you don't hear from the music press that you hear from the financial press. And that, that if you're thinking about, investing big money in a big piece of gear, I'm not saying not to do it, but it's just, you might just want to get all the information that you can.
And if you search the Avid site for their events page or something like that, they have all of their conference calls. And there was a conference call the day they did the purge. And it was actually really interesting because all the questions were from financial companies.
Yeah. And they do. You're right. They do list that because I saw
that. And they have a markup. They have to.
It was the 13th, actually.
They have to by law.
Yeah.
Public company.
Yeah. So it might be too bad I found out about the 13th phone call on the 14th, but
there is a call
through number where you can listen to what the phone call was.
I think really the other part is now how companies are going to support, like the plug-in companies.
Right.
Are they still going to support RTAS as much? I've talked to several companies, which you can't name, that are on the fence whether they're going to do AAX.
Yeah. Well, I was talking to Jeremy about this. You have AAX format that you have Pro Tools, but then you've got Reason just opened up their rack to third-party plugins. And you look at their plugins, and their plugins are $79, $49. And that's the Apple iOS way of selling stuff where you make something, you sell it for a little bit, but you sell a ton of it. And so it's like, if I was a plugin developer, do I go AAX or do I go
VSTR test?
Or go with Propellerhead? It's just there's just options out there. I don't know which is going to happen.
I think another mistake, if we're talking about the mistakes having made, I think they oversimplified and weren't completely truthful about how easy or difficult it is to take an existing plugin and turn it into an AAX plugin, because at first they were making it seem like it was a totally simple thing, and they were going to help all the manufacturers do it. And it turns out it's not that simple a thing. They are willing to help the manufacturers, but a lot of the manufacturers I've spoken to say they basically have to start over from scratch. And it's a lot of them have said they're going to do it, but it's a lot of time and money they have to put in.
Well, you know, and as we wrap this up, I will say on plugins, the one thing that I've noticed on having to do a lot of native plugins on my new system because they're not DSP powered yet, is it's weird to have a session. Like, I have a template for VoiceOver, has all my compressors and everything, a lot of Waves plugins that ran great on my old Pro Tools system. But on this Pro Tools system, I have to run them all in native, and I get latency issues. You know, the very first time I recorded a VO session with somebody that was monitoring with that, they were like, there was a massive slapback, and I could not figure out what it was. And I'm like, what is this? And I'm figuring out I've got my buffer set to like 2. Okay, not 2, but, you know, I've got it like to 64, and I'm just trying to figure out what's going through. And then I thought, oh, I wonder if it's the plugin. And I changed everything to like channel strip and the DSP, I mean, and their dynamics and everything. Zero latency. I mean, it was fast and it was quick. And so, you know, that whole changeover is really affecting me in ways that I didn't think it was going
to
affect.
Well, and that's a lot of money to spend for worse functionality, which right. in your limited yeah. case is what had
when
happened.
You feel like, now I've got the new hardware, so I need to upgrade my computer.
Yeah. Like, and I got the hardware and the computer at the same time. So it's going to be interesting. I don't want to spend any more time. We're going to take a break right now. But I just wanted to bring this up because it's we're in one of those moments where things are just – you feel like you're on a rubber canoe. It's a little wobbly. And, you know, Martin's over here going, now? Now?
No. Not yet.
Not yet.
Wait for it. Wait for it. That's
right. Well, the one thing you know for sure is the money will still be money when you make your decision. The gear is going to go down in value like crazy.
Yeah.
But the money right now is holding its value.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about money.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, we were talking about how we spent a lot of money and now it's all going to be nothing. Oh, wait, no.
That wasn't quite that depressing.
No, I'm just kidding.
Andrew's the only smart one amongst us.
Hardly.
But, you know, continuing in this money theme, a couple weeks ago, I was having dinner with Martin and we were talking about the state of just audio in the industry. And just so you guys know that the Audio Nowcast, we actually talk like this in real life. I mean, these are conversations that we would have with each other, you know, whether or not we were recording or not. And so we got into this really good discussion because he has his album's coming out and talking about money. And
I was trying to get a bit of money off of Mike.
Trying to sell
advance me for the album. Yeah.
And just, you know, it was really interesting, and I won't spill the beans right now, but as we were getting into it, I just thought, we need to talk about this. We need to talk about this on the podcast. And then the whole Emily White post incident came out, and then I thought, you know what? For sure, we're going to mention this. And I wrote up a little email, and I sent it to all the guys, and I said, we're going to talk about this. And then one of our listeners, Rebecca, she posted something on our site and said, hey, let's talk about all this. And then Bobby said, hey, I've already talked about this on my blog. And I read his blog and it was like, now we really need to talk about this. And so I'm going to hand it over to Bobby for a second for him to recap. Why don't you recap mm-hmm. the whole incident with Emily White and the response and then your response?
Okay. Emily White was an intern for NPR, and she wrote on the NPR blog that she had 11,000 songs on her – I'm not sure if it was her iPad or phone or whatever, a computer. But she only paid for 15 CDs in all of her life. Now, what she was lamenting was she felt bad about it because she actually wanted to support the artist that she liked. But on the other hand, she didn't want to buy CDs. So she was conflicted. And she basically said, oh, she's 20 years old or 21 years old. I'm not the only one. All my friends are like this as well. So that set off a firestorm within the music industry. And David Lowery, who was the lead singer, leader of Camper Van Beethoven and Cracker, which are two kind of B-level bands from the 80s, he wrote a long dissertation or two on how bad that is and why musicians should get paid and et cetera, et cetera. None of which helped the cause because, you know, as far as Emily White and her friends are concerned, yeah, but music should be free because that's the way it's always been and that's the way we feel it should be. So the real problem is that you have a whole generation that feels this way. While all of us, we have to get paid and everybody wants to get paid for what you're doing. So there's the whole dilemma in that you have a generation that loves music as much as any other generation, wants everything the way we did, but doesn't want to pay for it. Now, what ends up happening here is the fact that the world is changing. The music world is changing. So you either sink or swim with the change. Now this is me talking.
Right.
And this is what I wrote in my Music 3.0 blog. It was that you can't get pissed about it. You can't rail against the fact that it's happening. The only thing you can do is go with it until something else happens, and it's going to. There's going to be a way for us to get paid. The cycle's going to come back around, but it's not there yet. So I think people like David Lowery, who's in fact fighting the whole turn into the new paradigm,
right?
He's not helping the situation, in fact. But that's the whole thing. It's basically that there's this generation that doesn't want to pay for it, but yet feels bad about it.
And I have to inject here that when you read, and we're going to link to it, Bobby's response, I loved it because basically it was, it's changing and you're either going to sink or swim. I mean, it was cut and dry.
It was so obvious from David Lowery, is that his name? What he wrote. I mean, I attempted to read it today, and it's just page after page after page after page. It goes on endlessly, and usually if it takes you that long to say something, it's because you're searching for what you should be saying. And, I mean, after the first 10, 15 minutes of trudging through this thing, I got his point early on. It's just, it's, you know, it's like fighting the tide or fighting...
Well, but to be fair, I mean, he's very thorough, and the one thing he spends probably way more time on than he should, but which is interesting to some people, is sort of the historical perspective of actual numbers, though, which to me makes it like, okay, at least he's trying to base things on facts as he sees them.
Right. But it's very easy to focus on the pixels and miss the big picture, and that's kind of the way I felt about his thing.
Well, and here's the thing. You know, being in his position – it's scary. I mean, it really is because, as Bobby has said, it's kind of dismal out there. You know, when we first got into the digital revolution, and if you look, go back to some of our early podcasts when we were starting to talk about this, I remember talking with – in one of the podcasts that you were here, Andrew, so you know it was a long time ago. But no, but I remember when you first mentioned the 360 deal and all these other kind of streams. And, you know, we're talking – 5 years ago, 4 years ago, and everybody's saying, okay, well, we got to see what's going to happen. And what's happening is nobody's making money. There's a lot of people. There's the percentage of people that are making money is really small compared to the percentage of people that are out there.
The 360 deal was never good for anybody except the record label, so that's the problem.
Exactly. And so what I wanted to talk about on this is at the same time that Martin's releasing his album and he's about ready to go and we're talking about Spotify, I get a letter from a kid who's going to go, he's asking me about Full Sail, about whether or not he should spend his money at Full Sail, which is funny because I had recently talked to another friend of mine who was talking about how much it was. And he wanted to know if it was worth spending the $78,000 that it would take for him to go to Full Sail for Recording Arts. And first of all, I didn't want to take responsibility for spending somebody's $78,000. But, you know, there's a pro and a con for spending that kind of money. And so what I wanted to do is I said, you know what, the only way people can make those kind of decisions, because quite frankly, if it was for me, I think I'd buy like a really nice board and a, you know, Pro Tool system and start recording people and start, you know, practicing.
Or Maserati.
but there's a difference, to be fair, though, because he didn't have that $78,000. He was going to borrow it.
Right,
and
exactly.
He's going to borrow it in increments. So it's not like he had it right there.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So and which is even in some ways, it's a little worse because, you know, you're going to mortgage your future. Now, a lot of
probably
people –
probably without thinking about it.
Well, though, yeah. I mean, a lot of people, you know – want to get into audio, and a lot of people want to get into music. And so I'm going to talk some numbers right now. And I just want to let people know from what I know, and maybe you guys can fill in around the edges some of the numbers that we're going to talk about. But we're going to start right off the bat. If you look up in the – according to the Department of Labor, U.S. Department of Labor, I looked it up today, the average – what they put down as the average salary for an audio engineer – is $42,000 a year. And
is that high?
And well,
plus the coffee. It's all the coffee you can drink.
The top 10% make over $90,000. And then the bottom 25% make less than like $20,000. It's really, really low on the bottom end. And so, okay, so that's what the US, you know, government says about audio engineers. And then I want to expand it even more into what you can expect in the real world. For instance, I know post-production. Right now, there's guys out there that are mixing cable TV shows. Now, what I would call a lesser network, kind of like the HDNet and some of the little fringe networks, you're getting shows that are being mixed for $200 an episode, $300 an episode. That's putting in, you know, a full day to mix that. Maybe four hours.
That's non-union, right?
Non-union.
Right. That's important.
Right. No, that's very important. Yes.
Because I thought I could talk to the other side.
Yes, because we're going to get into union. So if you're thinking about coming out and you want to start mixing and doing mixing, you can expect, you know, you can find the non-union piecework about, you know, $200-$300, $350.
And that's once you're competent enough to actually mix the show.
And
not competent enough aesthetically, but just know enough to even get through
sure.
it.
Right. And that's the low rung, just the bottom of the competence, you know. And those jobs are not staff jobs, by the way. Most of those jobs are you're doing it at your house and you're sending files somewhere because you have your Pro Tools rig in there. Okay?
By the way, the music mixes on HDNet are usually really bad. So you can tell they're only spending $200 or $300 because it sounds like it.
Yeah. And those are the mixes that you get out of school and you're probably going to start wanting to find, especially and post-production, there's way more post-production work like that than you would think. And that's those are kind of the bottom feeders that you want to go to. Now, if you're going to get into editing, okay, and this is non-union, if you go into non-union editing, just to show you some of the stuff that's out there, for a 22-minute animated show, if you're a sound effects editor, non-union, 22 minutes, on a cable network, this is not your major networks, but again,
Nickelodeon, let's say, right?
Yeah, I would even go more like Cartoon Network, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
The guys on one of the shows a friend of mine is working on, and I'm not going to name any names or anything like that, but I'll give you the real numbers. They were making $800 per 22-episode show. And that was a pretty effect-heavy show.
Wait, say that again?
They were making $800 per 22-minute show.
22-minute. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah, big difference there.
You said 22 episodes.
Yes, I did make a mistake.
And we're not going to edit it out.
So how many hours work are we talking?
Right. And they delivered one a week. That's a week's worth of work for them. Now, some of the guys were picking up two shows and they were working 6 days. And so they were making $1,600 a week to be a sound effects editor, non-union. So if you go to – if you want to go up from there, if you want to go up into the major independents, like still non-union, but now you're working on bigger TV shows and even some big independent feature films, the editors were making $1,700 a week on some of those stuff. So you can kind of gauge, you know, as you go high and if there's more and more money, where you're going to end up on the whole scale. But what I want to stress on this whole thing is all along the way, the higher you get up, the more and more people are gunning for that job. And sure, the competency absolutely goes up. Then we get into what you want to talk about
the
union?
Yeah, well, actually, I want to talk about two industries because I think also, you know, our company deals with TV as well. And TV's been saturated by a lot of anybody who work, they'll work at their house. This, it's kind of what happens in the music industry. So TV specifically has been just pummeled by, I'll just go to the lowest person, just anyone who'll do
especially it. Especially in the audio, where the audio editors are doing
now,
the audio
editing. Let's talk about, still stay in the non-union realm. Because there's one thing that's different, and that's gaming. The average sound designer gaming makes $75,000 to $150,000 a year. The average supervisor slash mixer is making $100,000 to $200,000 a year. And gaming, everybody that I know leaving Berkeley and all these places, they're going straight into gaming. They're going to EA. EA's got many places to go. They're going to Activision. All of these audio people, music people, it used to be they came into TV and movies. They're moving straight into video games. I got a guy who's a composer. He just built a custom house off of Malibu. He's a composer. He's making a ton of money doing music for games. It's very, very, what's a good word? It's not as hard to get in.
Right. So, I just have to interrupt you for 1 second. But there's a tremendous amount of competition. It's not as wild of a West.
But you know what? In my opinion, because I came out here, my parents did draperies in Arizona. Sure. I knew nobody.
Right.
There's always been competition. If you wanted to get in the music business, I came to town. The record plant said, guess what? If you want to come in, you clean our toilets.
Right.
For 5 years, then you go park cars. You be a PA. Eventually, you're sitting near a console coming from an audio school.
Right.
So it's always been that wall that you've had to go in, and there's always been the competition. I think what's interesting, though, in Hollywood, it's always been, you got to come here. So it's very focused. Gaming is not here. Gaming's in Seattle. It's in San Francisco. It's in South Carolina. It's in Vancouver. It's all over the place. It's in Finland, of all bizarre places. It's in Germany. It's in London. It's international. There's so much going on. And if you want to look at where the new entertainment is, a lot of the stuff we're doing, kids don't necessarily watch as much TV, and I'd say they don't even watch as many movies. They love to play games. That is a new generation of entertainment that's happening. As you follow those forms are paying because they need those people. They're flush with money, though the gaming business has gone up and down. I think what's happened with gaming, though, that's bad about audio is that when you're on a console, it's great because you've got multiple tracks, and it's very much pro audio.
Right.
But now with mobile games coming out, the paradigm has just changed because now you're not streaming 30, 40, 50 tracks of audio. Now we're back into the old gaming consoles.
Right.
Where you're lucky to be at 16-bit. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
So I think that there are areas of industries. When we talk about film – or union work. I'm a union member, and I feel very strongly. I don't think music had unions, and look what's happened. I think that because they can't go, I'm going to know the cheapest guy. If you're doing union film, it's just the rate. You know, they're still making a ton of money. It's just acceptable about this is what it's going to take.
Right.
So it doesn't create the atmosphere of I just want the cheapest.
Right.
So I'm going to keep talking you down, and I'll keep going with the most talented person, young person that'll work for nothing. So that business model doesn't fit. I think there are a lot. One of the things, though, I think that's changing in post-production, which is different, is TV is changing in the fact that now all of a sudden Netflix wants to create content.
Right.
And Amazon wants to create content.
Right.
Now, if you're smart, more than ever, if somebody wanted to create a post-production paradigm, they could start doing it by those secondary companies because they may not want to spend as much.
Right.
And I do believe that if you are in-house, you know, independent, it's always difficult because you're always competing at that point. But if you want to be an in-house guy, all of a sudden, the discovery people, they're making a pretty good living.
Right.
That's non-union.
Right.
All of a sudden, these companies are still going to want to create content.
Let me ask you a real quick question because I want to keep this rolling. What's the union minimum right now?
Union minimum is $2,100 a week.
Okay. So
for an editor.
Right.
And it's about $3,000 to $5,000 for a mixer.
Okay. So then we hit the upper echelons of the whole TV.
But that's the minimum.
Whole, right. So that's how much you have potential going on that side. Now I wanted to follow the post production side because that's the side that I know on the sound effects editing. We're going to flip the coin now, and we're going to go to the music side of things, all right?
You're talking audio or are you talking
– I'm talking music. I'm talking recorded, what you would consider
a
classic engineer. I have a friend of mine who is right now working in a small little studio over in – I think it's Boise actually. I don't know. I haven't talked to him in a while. But he was
– So a good friend.
No, he's not. But he was making $600 a week at a small little studio, basically doing demos and bands and things like that. It's extremely difficult to go from there then to the next level of being what? See, I couldn't even fill in that next level because a lot of studios
– Well, it used to be a staff engineer at a public –
Right,
but
now
such
thing. There's no such thing, right? You have a second maybe that is at the facility, but Andrew, as a mixer, you're going to whatever studio or working in your own studio.
Yeah, you know? I'm in my own studio. I mean, I think in terms of full-time employed assistants, you top out at $15 an hour. And I would think for staff engineers, you top out at $300 a day.
Except Capitol,
which is a union
house. Union house, yeah.
So, but apparently, from talking to some people,
$1,500 a week's not bad.
But they're only the only difference between being union and non-union in terms of what they pay people is that they're guaranteed hours. So if the studio is slow, they still have to pay them. But even with the benefits, it doesn't work out to be that much more expensive to run that place. Apparently, I mean, I don't know actual numbers, and I think they do get paid pretty well. But if you're in a big, if you're working at Record Plant doing the same job as Capitol, I don't think the guys at Capitol are making that much more.
I heard that some of the assistants were making $50 an hour.
As assistants?
Yeah, because of the union.
Well, then I'm wrong. If that's what they're making, then yeah. I mean, because I don't know any assistants making more than $50
I agree.
Else.
Yeah, all right. That's why.
But they're also very, very few studios left,
right,
period,
right,
that have right. staffs. And some studios that have been around, let's say they have a long-term client for a while and they're making a certain amount, that guy's budgets get cut. They decide to build their own place. All of a sudden, they're trying to book a studio out. So a studio that used to be able to get $1,400 a day easily is lucky to get $800. And this is, again, it's actually happened pretty fast. It's in the last 5 years because it was – studios were closing, but the ones that stayed open kind of left their rates where they were.
Right.
And now they're all having to cut their rates because the product is worth nothing.
Yeah, they're competing for budgets that keep going down,
and this
too.
Is why the game – the people who make games can get paid because they still have – if you've got a major computer game, you have something that's pretty well copy protected and will sell, what, 800,000 to a million copies the first week at $50 a pop.
Right.
And obviously there's video to go with it. It's not just an audio thing. But, I mean, that's a huge amount of cash in a week.
I mean, they're spending $40 to $60 million to make a video game now.
It's a feature film, really.
Per game.
Yeah.
It's actually, I'd say the budgets I'm finding for games – are equal to a lot of the budgets in film now.
Yeah.
And I would guarantee a lot of that is because they have a product that is not easily copied.
Yeah.
No, the only difference I think, though, in gaming that's bad in that business model is there's no secondary life. Once the game comes out, you play it.
You're done.
Yeah.
And to change it to another platform costs a lot of money compared to TV, which has, you know, you could keep just playing it over and over and over and over and over. It doesn't cost you anything.
So, as you can see, if you were going to invest $78,000 into a recording school,
go in the post.
which direction would you go? I mean, it's kind of obvious where the money is to be made.
We've been saying since the beginning of this podcast, though, for music, you don't go into it unless that you have to.
Right, right.
And that was back when there was money.
Right. Yeah, I just found it interesting as I'm starting to do the research on some of these real world numbers as to how it's kind of switched and follow the money. You know, mixing post production, I knew that I could make even post production. You know, you could do independent films, reality TV. Like right now, reality TV on like an AMC, the mixers are making $30 an hour.
Yeah.
$30 an hour for reality TV, you know, and you're thinking, well, you see them all the time, but that's just it. You see a lot of them, and production and reality is about as slim of a production budget as you can get. They will talk you down to practically nothing. And those are the major reality shows. They're not the fringe networks. These are like, you know, some of the things that you see on the Bravos and on the AMCs.
Now, that being said, I have a good friend. He's actually a co-author in one of my books on whatever book it is. And he's making a really good living for doing music for reality shows.
Yeah.
Now, he has, I think, 11, last time I talked to him, that are going on at the same time. And he's doing really well.
And generally, those guys build a library that keeps getting pulled from.
So they don't score specifically anyway.
Yeah.
And the other side of that, and I don't know exactly what the numbers are, but music placements for songs – you're getting 20% of what you got a couple of years ago. Yeah. And they're plummeting faster and faster.
You know what? I will tell you this as somebody who does commercials, and I see how much library music, how much they pay. Like if you're doing a local regional, let's say it's one that'll cover like the Bay Area, not just San Francisco, but the Bay Area. You know, they were paying for a cue, you know, $400, $500 to use it for a limited run. I mean, you know, so it's like, okay, 2 weeks, we're going to license that cue for $500.
Buyout or the license or
no, it's just the license. Okay, it's just the license for those specific time period. I'll tell you where there is some money, though. If there is money left, and that's where a good friend Brandon works, is feature trailer stuff. Mm. Those guys are still paying big bucks. You're talking about
– the mixers make good money too.
Yeah. You're talking about if you do like a Rise or you do a design sound, you can license that one sound for $1,500. Just that one sound. You can license a hit, a one hit, a one boom or something like that for like $500.
I have to get my Jupiter right now.
if you do like a drum beat, like a, you know, how a lot of the trailers are now very percussive, you know, the actions and stuff like that. That's like $8,000 to $10,000, you know? And licensing, it's not uncommon for just an okay, you know, B level, C level band, if they really like the songs, they're going to get like 25 to maybe 100K a song. For the trailer. But it's not just the trailer. When you do work like that, it's the trailer and all the other trailers that they're going to do. So they're going to light the TV and things like that. And
you know, the sad part about all that, though, even as great as that still is, it's still a fraction of what it was 10 years ago.
Right.
I mean, 10 years ago, it was unbelievable.
Right.
And what they were paying.
And you got like, well, like Nine Inch Nails, you know, they'll a cue of theirs will be licensed for $300K and, you know, Kanye
Inception.
And Jay-Z.
Anything by Inception.
Yeah. They were $500,000 to $1 million. If the studio really wants that cue and the movie's big enough, they'll pay $1 million.
Well, that's the whole thing. Yeah. Otherwise, there's a tremendous amount of competition.
Exactly. And you have to be on – you better be on the ball on your stuff. You better just be – you know, you better know your stuff because there are the competition – there's probably in what Brandon does in Hollywood, I would say there's only about – three other guys that do what he does as being a staff
guy. No kidding.
Like that.
I know in feature film, there's only three mixers in all of the trailers for films.
Yeah, really?
Seriously. I mean, as far as the big features go, there's three guys doing it. It used to be one guy.
Yeah.
And he did pretty much everything.
Yeah.
Then SSI opened up.
Yeah.
You've got.
There's only a handful of a lot of mixes like spot mixing, like some of the stuff in the branding stuff that I do. There's probably maybe 6-10 other places that do the same type of stuff that we do, probably LA and New York. There's other places where you can get spots done, but the same paradigm as to what it is where I work, there's just not a lot. So you really have – there's a lot of competition, and you really have to be on the ball.
And it's a close-knit group.
Getting to your original point, though, about, though, is it worth $78,000 to go to Full Sail for all this?
Yep.
I mean, speaking more from the music side, I personally – I know a lot of successful engineers and producers and, you know, different people in audio, you know, music for audio or audio for music. But none of them got to where they are if they're successful because of that initial schooling. They all had the hunger for the knowledge, and whether they were going to get it at a school or get it out in the real world, they were still going to get it.
Right.
And I think it's very hard to justify that kind of an expense. The truth is, if you really have the drive and can't imagine doing anything else, then you're going to fight your way into a studio and be an intern and learn the craft, or buy a little bit of gear and learn the craft yourself. I mean, there's no way to learn something better than to own it and live with it and use it yourself.
But that said, you need to know a lot.
Yes, but I mean, you don't need a full...
No. Like, but like, I've had an intern working with me for a few weeks, and he just got out of high school. Really smart kid, amazing musician, great drummer. Like, understands everything about music. He's recorded demos. He's in a band that does stuff, and he's just been hanging around the studio while we're mixing, doing some overdubs. And you realize there's so much knowledge as an engineer you take for granted about physics, about electronics, about how filters are. I mean, just like what you know about your Jupiter 8 is more than 99% of the people in the world know about sound.
Yeah.
And you do have to know it, and you got to learn it somewhere. So,
but wouldn't your guy learn it from you? I mean, if he spent enough time with
yeah, I'm not going to teach him a thing.
But you know what? Wait.
That's the problem.
I went to audio school, so I can speak the other side of it.
Well, I went too.
That's right. And what I loved was I had 30 hours a week on a console, just practicing, making those mistakes, and really understanding it, but not even, you know, one of the things, I went to Berklee College of Music, and the thing that's helped me the most that I think, because the problem is you learn a piece of gear, you come out, the gear's changed, it's, you know, it's progressed beyond that. But that's not what I found that's been good about Berklee, was I got to know other people from Berklee.
Right. Yeah.
And the networking alone is why you go to those schools.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, is really it's your key to get in the door anymore, because if you expect to be an intern someplace, they're not even going to think about anybody unless they have a school.
Then there's the decision between something like Full Sail, which is basically a trade school.
Right.
And there are a million alternatives to that one.
College,
so many, whether now there are so many recording programs that are actual degree programs.
Well, I'll tell you who I think did it really well was our good buddy Jeremy, because he went to
University of Miami with Andrew.
The University of Miami with Andrew.
Not at the same time.
Not at the same
time.
And look
where that got you, in a little room. But we can't even see
years apart.
But he actually, he studied engineering, and he has a Bachelor of Science degree in engineering.
Right.
You know?
And when I did it, it was a Bachelor of Music and a minor in electrical engineering. Right. But I mean, that's like, you got to know that.
Yeah. I mean, that's having some chops behind you should the audio thing not work out.
Yes.
But there's also a thing I think that, you know, nothing against Full Sail or schools like that, but anytime they cram a lot of information within 6 months to a year and expect you to know it, there's a difference when you go someplace for 3 to 4 years.
Well,
and you learn it.
In all fairness to them, it's 5 semesters for their recording.
But also, I mean, to Rob's point, you get out of it what you put into it, and you would get that out of working. I mean, you can tell in 5 seconds when you walk into a room full of students at any of these schools that a couple of them are going to be amazing, and the rest of them are not going to make it. And it's just from motivation and personality that it doesn't have anything to do with the knowledge.
But, let's not trivialize. $78,000 is a lot of money.
Yeah. It's a lot of money.
Go ahead, Bobby.
But, you know, you go to school for two reasons. One is to learn what you really want to learn, and the other thing is to find out what it is you don't want to do.
Yeah,
so a lot of times you'll go and you'll do something and go through the whole course and go, I don't know if I like that. And that's just important.
Well, and you also say something, learning how to learn.
Yeah,
I don't think
you
learn that in high school.
Yeah, I agree.
In college, they go, figure this out. And you have to learn how to learn.
Well, I will tell you this, you know, along with what you're saying is I went to Art Center College of Design. I actually was a film major, and I got enough knowledge in there I got 3 semesters under my belt, and then I took off on the road. I got an opportunity to tour, and it was like, boop, I'm gone, you know. Do I want to stay home, or do I want to see the world? I'll take the world. But having said that, I got a lot of gigs because of those 3 years that I had, because it was all the foundation courses that allowed me to translate it to later on in life. I knew all about 70 time code. I knew all about that because my first job when I got off the road was working in post-production. So all that to say is I wanted to mention those real world numbers for people to see and help them with their decision on where they're going to go and invest their money, you know, where they're going to invest their $78,000. Before we leave, because we're going to have to wrap this up, the other thing that along the whole money thing is, and talking about this article, was there's this new phenomenon going around, and there's this Spotify guilt, you know. People are like the Emily, we're like, oh, I want to, you know, I want to pay for it, but, you know. I don't know how.
And no artists are making any money off of Spotify.
Right. That's the thing. I mean, I was talking with Martin. I said, you know, if I was an artist right now, I don't think I might put my old catalog on Spotify, but any of my new stuff, I don't think I'd put it on Spotify.
I mean, I've got a label and it's tiny. And to be fair, I haven't really made money from anything. But last year, we made 11 cents from Spotify.
That much.
Which puts you in the top 5%.
Well, and because, interestingly, their deals with the labels is exactly the same as the old school label deals with artists.
Yeah.
They get advances that are then recouped. And if they don't recoup them, well, they still get to keep the money. But it also means that they're not bothering to tie it to the artist. Like, no, we already got that money. So since we already got paid the money, I don't care which artist helped recoup it. So who knows what's going on?
It goes to the bottom line. It, as far as they're concerned, it's a sale.
Yeah.
But it's not a unit sale.
Right. It's not tied to the artist because they've already had the money. Yeah. So, but what you need to do is there needs to be a product that people want to buy. And we've been through this a million times.
Right.
But the label screwed up by not realizing that digital music was going to be a thing.
Right.
So they didn't make it something that people want to buy. Therefore, digital music is free. And that's that.
But nowadays, it's only free if you let it to be free. Don't let it be free. Don't put all your stuff on Spotify. Well, you don't have to stream your stuff. Why? I think what's going to end up happening is people are going to seek things that are exclusive. There's a certain value in not being able to get it every time you.
I disagree.
Yeah, no, I think when, like, I know when the streaming systems were sort of battling their first battle in the States when Spotify finally started up and Mog was going and radio was going. And the thing that made me decide which one I was going to pay for, even though I think it sounded way worse than the others, was the catalog. As soon as I would search on one of them and not find stuff, search on the other and find every single thing I couldn't find everywhere else, well, obviously I'm going to take the one that's got the content.
But why, as a label, why do you want to put your stuff on Spotify? It gains you nothing.
No, it does, actually.
Exposure.
Builds an audience.
Absolutely, it does.
But what gives an audience if you get it for free?
Wait a second.
You're still making money doing live shows.
It's visibility. There's two things. If you're an artist just starting out, you need every fan that you can get. The only way you can get the fan is get that thing out there no matter what. Get all the torrents to take it.
Right.
Have people pirate it. It doesn't matter. You need fans. But you reach a certain point where that turns over. And suddenly, now you got plenty of fans. You got a great fan base. Now it's time to turn that into some cash. Where is that point? That's the problem.
Right.
Where
are
that point?
But the jam bands are on it, though. The jam bands are way ahead of the curve.
Yes, they are.
Not with Aquarium Rescue Unit. Them, Widespread Panic, Fish, all those guys, free downloads. But
I get you. Listen, live, if you were young and you wanted to start off and you wanted to start your career and you wanted the fans, you get to hear. But what I'm saying is not everybody's going to tour. There's some really good songwriters that are out there that aren't going to tour. And why? What is out there for them to put it on?
I think saying that you should keep your stuff off Spotify at this point is almost the same as saying you should keep it off the BitTorrents. Like, it doesn't matter, and you can't, and you might as well be where people go to see music. I mean, people listen to music on YouTube now. That's probably one of the
biggest places. But why not have a controlled release. I'm not saying stay off of it forever, but your album's going to come out.
There have been plenty of artists who do that. It takes 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or whatever.
6 months, a year. I mean, put your old catalog in, but don't put your new stuff in.
The secret is you give away a certain part and you charge for another. So, for instance, you have a deluxe release. If you got a fan, the fan is going to want to buy the deluxe release, and a lot of artists do that now. They have something that's extra special. You get it. I'm just thinking off the top of my head here. Okay, you buy the CD, you get a T-shirt. Okay, there's five extra songs on this. Okay, there's jam songs that you can't get in there. You know, right. There you go. So
you've got to create value.
Yeah, value that way, yes.
I don't know. I don't think staying off Spotify is going to help.
I'm not anti-Spotify, okay? I subscribe to it, but I also know that when a new album comes out and I get it and I make a playlist for that artist, you know, I don't have to buy that album, but yet they're not getting the same amount of money.
They're not.
That's actually the big problem.
And actually,
what would be the difference between you listening to on Spotify or waiting about 48 seconds after the release and then going and listening on YouTube, where it will also be free and be available in dubious quality immediately?
Well, dubious quality and the fact of taking it with you and where you can go. I think at least owning your music, you can control the process that you ingest your music and that you listen to your music.
But see, that's one of the big problems that music is facing right now, which goes back to the Emily White thing. We're changing from a download, and just forget about hard product now.
Right.
Now we're changing from a download music society to a streaming music society.
Now, would that be subscription or not necessarily?
Not necessarily, but yes, ideally it would be subscription. The record labels, more than anything, that's what they want, subscription.
Which is what television was. Television was free. You turn it on, and all those shows were free.
Yeah.
So the question is, how did you make money? We all grew up with free TV.
Mm-hmm.
So it's exactly what's happening with music. What did we do? Commercials. You have to sit through the commercials. So the question is, what paradigm can music take that's free, just like TV was?
Radio.
Well, no, it was. It was radio. So now, radio in a format that the young people and the entertainment community can go in, it's the same thing. You never sat there and worried about, I got to pay for TV. Well, cable's new.
But it's not the same thing because you can't broadcast on the internet because each connection back to the server is a unique connection. So with radio, you get a powerful transmitter. It doesn't matter how many people are picking up your signal. They just haven't worked out the numbers yet to have broadcasting on the internet make sense, because you actually need a direct connection to every single listener.
But don't you think advertising is the way that's going to make money, the way TV made?
No, I mean, people just find a way around the advertising. Mm.
I got to say, there's way more commercials now on the internet. Like, if you go to CNN to watch any story on the internet, there's a commercial before every story.
Well, and they need to. Our entire economy is, I mean, we don't have to get too deeply into it, is based on advertising and slave labor in some way. I mean, that's how you make money.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's so true.
So if you can't build that into your model and you really are just trying to have something that is of value that you can sell, I mean, name a product.
Yep. Hey, really quick before we wrap this up, and I know you're absolutely right.
Andrew just took us to a dark place.
I wanted to Martin, what do you think about, as a songwriter, you're coming out with your CD. Does it scare you? Are you excited? How is all this technology?
You look a little
affecting,
scared. I gotta say, you look a little scared.
And, I was just trying to work out the route home where there's some bridges. Where just trying to find the one that would do it in one go. You know.
I mean, but a good example is
how are you structuring your release? Where is it going to be available and when?
We are going to go onto Spotify for the same reason you said. You know, I think people need, if you believe in your music and you're in this paradigm that's changing, you've just got to go with the flow. You've got to hope that you pick up people that find something in your music. There's a little bit original to, and they want to hold on and build a fan base around whatever you do. I've got a small label like you as well. I still want to do it on hardware because I still believe in it. I came up through it. I still know that most of my sales are from people that want to buy a CD, like a classical record. They want to hear it the best way they can.
Absolutely.
And I believe in that. So as an artist, you just got to have your own way of seeing it. I'm a veteran, so I'm very fortunate that a lot of the songs that I wrote back in that era of the 80s are still being played. They ended up to be songs that became still kind of medium classics. So my royalties have kept me in a position where I say now I want to put out my own record. I don't particularly expect to make any money from my record. I just hope that I can actually make another record.
Right.
Well,
but I don't really think about... I don't love the idea that people can just, you know, stream your music and not pay for it, and there it is on YouTube and you don't get anything for it. But you see, we are, as Bobby says, in this change.
Right.
And there's not much else you can do but swim. And then just say, I hope the work I'm doing
right.
makes it stand out to a certain audience, albeit small. And then you always also hope that some of the songs you're writing are going to get picked up for a movie or a TV show.
Well, to your credit, too, your album...
I'm selling it for $752.
No, but
I've already got to sell one.
but like you're saying, there's some value. I mean, you look at Martin's album, there's great artwork. There's a 20-page booklet. You see all the lyrics. I mean, there you get some value for buying the hardware. You get something a little extra, which I guess is along with what you're saying.
And I think you need to now figure out, how do you make the places where a fan can give an artist money visible to the fan? How do we make Emily realize her top 100 bands? Here's an easy place to go. Yes. Give them all $5.
Yeah.
And that's the trick to figure
Kickstarter.
Out. Well, yeah, I mean, almost reverse Kickstarter. Yeah. It's like, hey, I already did it all, and if you like it, just give me some cash.
Donate here on the website.
We want to do an album. Help us make it.
Were you going to say something for
you
us?
You know what? I was, and then I'm sitting here, and I'm wondering, it might be a little too personal. I was just going to say, I feel like probably the musician at the table, not like the musician, but I'm sitting at a table at a table with guys who have made money in the business. I have not yet. You know, I've been like sideman drummer, but I'm working on my music. I love music. I almost walked away from it like a couple times over the past 2 or 3 years because it's been like really frustrating. So it's like, it's two ways to think of it. I listened to this entire podcast, and there's not a whole lot of hope. Like, I didn't hear from like someone like myself. But I've also...
Do you want to come on the same bridge as me tonight?
Yeah, the Suicide Bridge of Pasadena. So check it out. But check it out, though. The beautiful thing is, though, Joe Sample and I were talking about this, 2 years ago? Like 15, 16, 17 years ago, I was thinking, okay, well, the way the business is going, there are so many leeches and parasites in this business that by the time it runs dry, all the thieves are going to leave. The only ones that are going to be left standing here are those that love it. You know what I mean? So for folks that are out there writing songs and everything, take it from somebody that hasn't put out a CD yet, and it's been about 15, 20 years, because I didn't trust where the business was going. I did see that, you know, the Blood Circus were taking all the money and all this, but check it out, though. Links like Pandora, and we're talking about Spotify. I do think it's a good way for people to, you know, to learn at least who you are. All the metal bands I know, particularly, they make their money on swag. They have the most killer swag on the planet. If you're not a lazy ass, you know, I believe in performing. I love touring. I love performing. You know, like Martin said, I'm not really sure I'm thinking about money on making any money with my music, particularly right now. It's okay, business card perhaps. Let's see what kind of festivals I can get on. Let's see if I can find an audience and then figure out merch or something. So there is some hope out there, you know.
I will say one thing is we had a guest, Tina Guo.
Right.
And we've become very good friends, and I've been following her. And she has got to be one of the hardest working musicians. She's now on tour with Cirque du Soleil.
Right.
But what she does is every time she's got a weekend or anytime she flies to LA, does a session. She's got her own line of cellos, her own line now of rosin. Mm. She's working all the angles. She's got swag. She's on YouTube doing videos all the time to make herself into a star. She's in her mid-20s.
Yeah.
And she's been doing all of this. And you're looking at what kind of the up-and-coming...
The future
business musician.
For sure.
Well, you know what? That's actually a good place to leave this discussion. I mean, we've talked about, you know, first of all, when we're done, we're all going to hug you for it.
I won't because I have a cold.
No, but
it was meant to be, you know what I mean? Like, but affirmation.
That's actually a really good place to leave it is at least we're in a position where we may not know what's going to happen next, but... you have a certain amount of control now that you didn't have before.
That's for sure.
And you can kind of control your destiny if you work. And you're going to have to work your ass off. None of this is easy.
That's never been it's always been the same, though. Yeah. You always had to do the same thing regardless.
Yeah.
And one other thing I'll say, there's no one at this table, and most of the professionals I know, at the moment when they're being creative and really doing the stuff they love, no one's doing it for the money.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
sure.
You have to remember that, and you should. I think we said it on the very first podcast. I think I remember saying it. You should only get into this business if you can't imagine doing anything else, because that's really the only justification that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, on that,
we are leaving it.
I'm not sure if that was an up note or a down.
No, that was in the middle, mate.
That's
in the middle.
That's a reality check.
Maybe I should join you on that bridge.
And that's, no.
That's three.
I'm going to keep Martin off Suicide Bridge.
I'll tell you, I'll end it on this. From, you know, once you do put in that hard work, I've never had as much fun doing what I'm doing as I'm doing right now. So it does pay off.
But you're riding a bike to work. You showed your car last week.
From Orange County.
It's getting worse. You just had to move house, didn't you? You just had to do a purge. Things aren't bloody good. Come on. You're not even wearing a t-shirt. He's got shorts on under the table. Eh?
And on that note.
Oh, man, that's a picture.
I'm glad you got my back, Martin. Hey, so before we go, really quick, and we'll make this really quick, anybody working on anything interesting? Anything happened to anybody? Anybody want to talk about anything?
My record comes out in 2 days' time.
That's right.
Thank you. Yes.
That's pretty awesome.
Thank you.
On a Wednesday.
And on a Wednesday.
Interesting. Yes. I'm just bucking the trend.
And actually, if you haven't listened to podcast 121.5, that's a special audio nowcast one-on-one interview with Martin Page.
Ooh.
And we play a little bit of every song in the album. And Martin talks about the album, and he talks about the question. Well, he answers the one question everybody's always wanted to ask him, but nobody has, but I did. And that's – now you're just going to have to listen to it.
There you go.
You got me going there. I thought, what is that question?
I don't know if everybody.
That was a great interview. I enjoyed that.
But it's really cool. It's a great one, and that's actually it's encoded a little higher. It's in stereo. We usually send these podcasts out in mono, and it's in stereo, and it's a little higher fidelity, so you can really listen to the music. So I just wanted to plug that. That's podcast 121.5.
Very cool.
Other than that, anybody?
We just announced the project that I'm working on to the world.
And what project is that?
At Comic-Con, we just announced. Pacific Rim.
Nice.
So Guillermo del Toro came out, showed a 4-minute clip, little teaser to about 6,000 people. Strangely enough, it hasn't shown up on YouTube. I don't think it will. They're not making it public. But they've got the buzz, and there's a lot of stuff online starting to buzz about the project. And I think now we go dark again and come back out in February with marketing. And I think we come out in July of 2013.
That's great.
I was just going to say one sort of funny thing that happened, without going into any real details about the project. I was working on a thing for Microsoft, and a producer was at my place, and there's a lot of stuff piled up around my place, and she was just walking around and looking, and she came back into the control room holding a Windows 98 CD that apparently I had sitting in a pile, and at that moment she had like this happy and sad look combination on her face. Like, I'm not sure whether she had newfound respect for me or not, but when she walked in with that CD, I said, I've got to get rid of some of this old stuff.
Time to purge.
And I told her, if you need it, I probably still have a Windows 1.0 disk here. That project, actually, it's something I did with Scott, and it should we'll be able to talk about it in not too
soon.
Long.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. Andrew, how about you?
Actually been working on something pretty cool. We're putting out a bunch of the songs that didn't make the last Chili Peppers record. Because we worked on 50 songs for that record.
Wow.
And
wow.
Finished a lot of them. So we're going through doing the final overdubs and mixing, and they're coming out
That's awesome.
A series of 9 7-inch singles, all vinyl. I mean, they'll be available digitally as well. And the artwork is a massive piece of artwork that's been chopped into 9 squares, so you get all 9 records, and then you get the full.
Oh, that's cool.
Good
and it's
idea.
Really cool.
Nice.
Really, really cool. And we're going to do some very fun things with the vinyl as well. There's stuff written on them. There will be some alternate ways to cut records that we're going to take advantage of.
That's cool.
Yeah. So it'll be a lot of fun.
When does that?
The first one comes out August 14th, I think. So a month, yeah.
Or in Audio Nowcast time.
Hours from
tomorrow.
Now.
Yeah.
And then there'll be, I think it's about one a month.
That's cool.
Nice. That's smart.
That's cool. Bobby, how about you? Are you working, you and Ken doing any more talks? I mean, I know you're talking this Thursday.
The one on Thursday, yeah.
At the Grammy Museum.
I saw your book also on the Mix Magazine.
Oh, really? I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You got to get that book. If you haven't picked up the book, Abbey Road to Ziggy Stardust, it's phenomenal. It's a great read, isn't it?
Mine yesterday at Book Soup, yeah.
Once you start reading it, you're not going to put it down. It's just fun.
Thank you kindly, yeah.
But are you going to be doing any signings or anything for that? Or
honestly, there's so many things like that going on. I look at the itinerary at the beginning of the week, and that kind of tells me what's happening for the week. Because it keeps on changing constantly. Right. It's a nice ride. That's all I can say.
It's a nice book. So, all right. Well, we will wrap it up. Forrest.
I don't know. I have a few some shows that I'm going to be doing with Angelique Kidjo, who's one of my favorite African artists of all time. So looking forward to that. And I think I'm going to brave being more visible and putting out some pretty devastating drum videos, I think, like on YouTube and things like that. Because I'm also thinking beyond the music thing. You know, I've also been blessed with wonderful, you know, corporate support, and I have to show some love to my endorsers and like Minor Symbols and Gretsch Drums and, you know, Roland V Drums and, you know. So I'm trying to – I need to show some support and love to my supporters. So,
great.
Man, you know what I mean?
I'm looking forward to the Vicious drum videos with
your
dreads and
playing hard. A lot of double bass madness, but it's all right, though. I'm feeling pretty good, you know.
It's cool.
Something with everything that's going on, I'm, for whatever reason, feeling really excited about still what's to come.
Great.
You know, overall. So.
All right. Well, if you have any comments or questions.
You're not up to anything you want to talk about, Mike?
He just moved.
He's still purging. Purging takes a while.
Yeah, I guess so.
I'm still basking in the glow.
Oh, then wrap it up. Feel free to wrap it up.
I'm actually working on a couple things that I can't say a word about, so I'm not going to. but if you have any comments or questions you want to reach us, you can get us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. And you can also catch us on our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/audionowcast. So from myself, and well, really quick, don't forget, buy Martin's album.
Oh, thank you, Mike.
It's coming out on the 18th.
Thank you very much.
It's coming out on the 18th of July in Audio Nowcast time. That's 2 weeks ago.
That's true, yeah.
and pick up Bobby's book. For myself and all the guys, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API and West Wave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez and uses AFEX's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.